I believe I have enough of this, and if not, you'll look in together. The sheets are making their rounds. There should be enough. I'm happy to see you. If we can get started, I'll also be able to end on time so you all can have lunch afterwards. There aren't enough sheets. Can we, some of you, look in with each other so that somebody else can see, if you wouldn't mind? And for those of you that feel easy about flipping through, you can grab a chumash. It's all there too. My name is Esther Shkap, and I've chosen to speak about Rachel. Can you talk a little louder? Yeah. If you all be very quiet, you'll hear me. I said my name is Esther Shkap, and I've chosen to speak about Rachel precisely because we're at the Tkufa of Bein HaMetzarim. And this Shabbat we read the first of what's called Gimel de Poranuta. There are 10 haftarot that are read from the Shabbat after Yudzayin Betamuz until begin Elul, and we begin the subject of Shuvah Israel. At that point, no longer are the haftarot related necessarily to the parasha, though sometimes there are parallels, but rather they are related to the time of year that we are in. There are 3 weeks of bad news, two of which come from Yirmiyahu, and the third comes from Shabbat Chazon, the Shabbat before Tisha B'Av, and that is from Yeshayahu. We will again hear from Yirmiyahu on Tisha B'Av. They read the Torah on Tisha B'Av, and there is a Haftarah on Tisha B'Av. And then again we will hear from him, and that's the selection that we have on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. That's the Haftarah there. And that Haftarah, the selection from that Haftarah, is the part that leads the theme here. And we'll explain a little bit about why I'm talking about this now. That Haftarah begins with Ko Amar Hashem, Kol Barama Nishma, Nehi Bechi Tamrurim. This moan, this sobbing of bitter crying. Rachel mevaka al baneha. Rachel is crying for her children. Me'ana lehinachem, refuses to be comforted. Al baneha, about her children. Ki einenu, for he's not there. Now, he's not there is a problem. Who is it modifying? It can't be baneha, because that would be ki einam, because they're not there. So if we're speaking about Rachel, who's buried near Bethlehem, and whose burial place was supposed to be the stopping point, as Nebuzaradan would take the Jews out, and so before they were taken to exile, they stopped to cry at her grave, and she represents the desolate Tzion, in the words of Yirmiyahu. She becomes the image of the motherland, if you like, okay? Who intercedes for Kudsha Brichu, then the question is, who is it that's not there? It should be ki einam. They're not there. They're not there. Not he's not there. he's not there. For he's not there. Because along with Am Yisrael, the Shekhinah left Israel and went to Golus with the people. And who was left? Yirmiyahu and Rachel. That's essentially how your entire book of Eicha is structured. It begins by an image of Tzion, which was borrowed from the imagery of Rachel, and it opens up with Eicha Yashva Badad, how she sits alone, refusing to be comforted. You see the same words. What Yirmiyahu did for Rachel was transform her from a mere matriarch to become a symbol of our people, to become a symbol of Tzion, Bat Tzion, Am Yisrael, Knesset Yisrael. She becomes, lehavdil elef havdalot, the Jewish Madonna. And it is to her that people pour their hearts out. And she succeeds to intervene. Why? Ki ko amar Hashem. And the Medrash fills in the rest of it, and that is that when Hashem was going to destroy his people, Avraham comes and intercedes. I won't read you the whole Medrash, it goes on for pages. And Yitzchak comes and intercedes. And Yaakov comes to intercede. And Moshe comes to intercede. And Aaron and Hashem refuses them until Rachel comes in and says, what's the big deal? You're jealous? Because it says that Hashem said, right, lo yu lecha Elohim acherim al panai, you shall have no other gods over me. Ki kel kana Hashem, God is a vengeful and jealous God. She says, I gave the simanim over to my sister. I am mere flesh and blood. Who should feel jealousy if not me? And you feel jealousy regarding gods made of stone, of gold and silver? To which Hashem responded, Ko amar Hashem, Mini kolech mi bechi einayich mi dima. Withhold your voice from crying, your eyes from tearing, ki yesh sachar lefeulatech. There is reward for what you've done. Ne'um Hashem. That's like, you can take this to the bank, signed and sealed. Veshavu me'eretz oyev. They will come back from the country of the enemy. Ve'yesh tikva le'achritech. And there is hope in the end. Ne'um Hashem. Again, did you notice? Before? After. By the way, in Aktub, at the bottom it says Ne'um. Right? Veshavu banim ligvulam. And the children will return to their territory, to their boundaries. They'll come back to you. How did this happen? What is the transformation? How did it occur that she became this image of Klal Yisrael, the interceder, the one that stands alone, and next to her is Yirmiyahu, who never married, who had no children, and who, when they took them to exile, he followed with them. You see, Yirmiyahu was chosen from the belly and didn't want it because he knew the message that he had to carry. Now, I need you to understand, he tried to warn them. He tried to change and knew that his message would fall on deaf ears. They tortured him. They put him in the bowl. The bowl doesn't just mean a pit. It used to be what they called isolation. A bowl was a tzinok. It was a narrow pit. You were placed into it. You could not sit. You could not lie. That was the torture. He was placed on a rack, not to be stretched, but they used to hang them upside down. Eagle spread. In the Beit HaMikdash, literally in the Chatzer of the Beit HaMikdash, because what did he tell them? He says, you've gone too far, you must submit. I need you to understand, that would be like somebody coming today and saying, you don't stand a chance, you've got to submit to Muhammad Abbas. Mm-hmm. You don't stand. They treated him as a traitor. They saw him as an aider and abettor to the Babylonians. So when it all came to be, he didn't have any schadenfreude, simcha la'ed, feeling that, you know, they got what they deserved. On the contrary, he hoped that he would be proven false. So he ran after them crying and he says, take me too. On the border, before they led them, they took the bachurim and they cut off their thumbs and their big toes. You remember that from Roots? That's in order to make them work in the mines and labor as donkeys to their death. But they would never be able to literally do anything fine. You understand? Without your thumb. And they couldn't run without their big toes. And Yirmiyahu goes and collects them and buries them. He's a Kohen. And where did he grow up? In Anatot, which overlooks on one side Midbar Yehuda, and on the other side, Kevel Achel. Which is why the third chapter of Eicha begins with Ani HaGever. Just as she's alone, he's alone, with no one. So he was left alone in Eretz Yisrael, because God told him, he says, take me too. And God says, it's either you or me. This way I will go with them to Golos. Imo Anochi Bitzara. And if not, who's going to stay for Eretz Yisrael? So Yirmiyahu will stay in Israel for that remnant that was left until, as you will remember, another rebellion occurred against the Babylonians and they killed Gedaliah ben Hachikam on... No, on Rosh Hashanah. That's right. That's why we passed the following day. You understand? And at that point, whatever remnant was there was wiped out and he fled to Egypt. So Rachel is transformed, as I said, by him, with whom he, as the male counterpart, identifies with her loneliness. But it didn't start this way. Steinsaltz, Sadin Steinsaltz, Sadin Steinsaltz, and Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, both look at Rachel a little bit awry. They believe that she was chosen, that he'd fallen for her, completely because of externals, because there is no other matriarch in which the emphasis is on her looks. So if you would please turn to the source, you will see as follows. Fleeing from his brother, who had promised to kill him, knowing that he would probably never see his parents again. Yaakov goes, right? You remember the whole thing with a ladder and climbing up, down, and he ends up finally in Haran, in the place where his mother had come from, going to see his uncle, Lavan. Odeno medaber imam, as he was speaking to the shepherds at the Be'er, v'rachel ba im hatzon asher le'aviha, ki ro'ai. Rachel shows up with the sheep because she was her father's shepherdess. Ramban points out very interestingly. He says, if you read the rest of it, you'll catch on something very interesting that happens to Rachel. Why is Rachel the shepherdess, he says, and not her sister Leah? Ki, as you will soon see, we're later on told that Enei Leah Rakot, she couldn't take the sun. So Rachel was made to work. Work that was essentially given to the runt of the litter, to the no-account kid. That's why David was. He was not going to get land. This was given to the lowest of the low. And he says, and because she was young, lo chashash lehafkira, he didn't mind if anybody would be there or would harass her or molest her. Now, why would he do this? You see, Rachel and Leah don't have a mama. Their mama's dead. Their father remarries and he has children by another wife. And so therefore, they're merely, this is like Cinderella. Okay, this is the Cinderella story. There you go. Now what happens is, Vayi kasheraa Yaakov et Rachel, bat Lavan, achi imo, ועצון לבן אחי אמו. ויגש יעקב ויגל את האבן מעל פי הבאר, וישק את צון לבן אחי אמו. And unlike Steinsaltz, he says, look carefully at what actually he saw. What did he see in the same verse? In case you didn't get it once, twice, three times, you're told, who did he see? He saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, who is the brother of his mother. And then Adam, brother of three times, Achimo, says the Or HaChaim HaKodesh. The resemblance was exceptional. Who did she look like? His mother. It was because she looked like his mother. And he who'd been torn away from the mother that loved him. Remember, he was her favorite. And yet, who was sent away? He was sent away. Who stayed home? Esav. Because in the final analysis, she's the mother of both of them. And Yaakov will be okay no matter where he goes. Esav is the troubled one. Esav is off the derech. Esav, we got to keep near home. We got to keep patrolling. So you go over there, my son. You'll take care. You'll be all right. You see, the problem about being the gutel, the good one gets neglected. He gets shafted. And when he sees her, he sees his mother. You can see the Or HaChaim. Sees his mother. Vayisa Yaakov. Vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel. And a spontaneous reaction. This is not MGM Hollywood. He kissed her. So the Ibn Ezra wants to justify and says he kissed her, as Sfardim would know this, or on the shoulder, but not on the mouth. And he points out that when it says Vayinashek with a nun, it means on the mouth. And when it's Vayishak, it's, you know, right? Or on the shoulder, or on the hand. And Batim, he says, to people who are cousins. Vayisad kolo vayefk. Now, this is really a romantic image. First he kisses the girls, next thing you know, he breaks out crying. Wouldn't sell in Hollywood, would it? Unless you understand that this was a not spontaneous action of somebody who looks just like his mother. And he cried for all of the emotion that was bottled up during his long journey from Hebron all the way to Haran, exiled. Of course, Chassidim say he cried because he kissed her. Vayaged Yaakov l'Rachel ki achi aviahu. And he introduced himself. Ibn Ezra's not happy. He says, first he introduced himself, then he kissed. No. He kissed her because it was not a thought through action. It was an immediate, spontaneous reaction. And the poor girl was like, oh my God, right? At which point he explains who he is. V'chi ben Rivkahu. See, in case you didn't catch it wise, it could have said, Vayaged Yaakov ki ben Rivkahu, right? But it says, no, I'm your relative. I'm the son of Rivka. Vataretz vataged le'aviha. And she ran and told her father, instead of going and telling her, ki einena, there's no one to talk to. Vayi kishvo alavan et shmo Yaakov ben achoto vayaratz likrato vayichabek lo vayinashek lo vayivyeo el beito vayisaper lelavan et kol advarim ha'el. And he told him everything that happened, right? And oh, come, my, you know, kinsman, let's go. Vayomer lo lavan, ach atzmi u'psari ata, your bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. And he fed him and he kept him there for a month's time, right? But, you know, guests can last only so long before they start, no matter how mishpucha they are. So he says to him, Vayomer Lavan Yaakov, Hach yachiyata, after all, you're my relative, and for that, avdatani chinam, you'll work for me for nothing. And from what he says, you know, you think he sat there out on the porch and waited to be fed and wined and dined? What was he doing? He'd been working. He put him to work from day one. Mishbucha, mishbucha, geshäft, geshäft, you know. Let's get real. You're going to earn your keep. He says, so just because you're my relative, you'll work for me for nothing? Hagidana, Hagidali, mamas kultecha, what's your wages? Now that I've worked for you for a while and I haven't paid you, I can now talk about maybe we can negotiate a contract. Ulelavan shtei banot shema gdola Lea v'shema ktana Rachel v'inei Lea rakot. Ibn Ezra wants to add an aleph, or he suggests that somebody adds an aleph from whom you disagree with, and that it was actually long eyes. But the Medrash tells us that they were red, soft eyes, eyes that have been crying an awful lot. V'shem, right? V'shem aktana, Rachel, as if you didn't know. All over again, right? V'nei Lea rakot v'Rachel haita yifat tohar v'yifat mar'eh. V'yav Yaakov et Rachel. Now, I can understand their suspicion. She's the only one in which we're told that a man loved her before he married her. And so he said, Evdecha sheva shanim b'Rachel bitcha haktana. I'll work for you for 7 years for your daughter, Rachel. And his answer is, well, I may as well give it to you rather than to somebody else. Okay, you can live here. Vayavod Yaakov b'Rachel sheva shanim, and worked for her for 7 years. Vayu beinav kiyamim achadim be'avato. And it was like just a few days because of his great love for her. Now, I don't know what your psychology is, but if you love somebody, you want them real bad, 7 years seems like 7 millennia, not like 7 days. But if love means how much I cherish you, how much I esteem you, how much I'm willing to give up for you, to him, 7 years was like a mere 7 days, because he would have given a great deal more for her. And that's love. And that's love. And that's love, not ahavat psalim. This is not mere flesh lust. This is the most profound love that there is. So to say that this is just because of her outside and not because of who she is after he'd been there for a while, frankly, is absurd. And therefore I don't. So how does that just facile Barbie suddenly become Rachel, if it were not for something else? Well, you all know the story. He didn't work 7 years for her. He worked 14 years for her, yes. And during that time, of course, she facilitated the marriage of Leah. And she didn't just facilitate the marriage of Leah, because when he woke up in the morning and saw that it was Leah, and had he rejected her, in those days as in these days, and said, this is not the one I wanted, it would have been a case that, as far as the public was concerned, Leah was damaged goods. Do you know what they do with damaged goods in those societies? They burn them. They burn them. So instead, Rachel lives with Leah. Now, he's willing to give him Rachel on credit. They marry. He says, just wait out this week, and you'll marry her the following week. Rachel never had a wedding. Leah had the big party and the Sheva Brachas and the whole shebang. She's the beloved one and got nothing. And got nothing. While protecting her sister, and can you imagine the emotion?
Why did she do it? I've always wondered why she's...
Because she loved her. Because she's her sister. Because she would not inflict any pain on her. Because this was not her sister's doing, this was their father's doing.
Because there is a rivalry, a jealousy.
But it's natural. The jealousy is the natural rivalry. But do you understand what you're doing now? You've taken a natural relationship, which is why the Torah forbids marrying two sisters. But that becomes her tragedy. And to have him and reject her sister would be immoral. It would be something that was untenable for her to live with. So instead, she lives with a storm in her heart.
And
also, Leah was the older one, so it would have been very embarrassing for her if her younger sister got married before her.
Yes.
Yeah, but that happens
a lot. But that is not nearly a bit as a problem as you're sharing a bed with your
sister.
Yeah.
So it's literally she did it to save her sister's life?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Sure.
And her reputation and her standing socially.
Where did the 7 years come from?
How did he come up with it?
Seven for seven.
My guess is that this had a great deal to do with her reaching puberty and her reaching an age marriageable age. Some say they were actually twins, and they're really not that much difference. She's no older than Esav was to Yaakov. That's the Medrash telling us, but we wouldn't know that from the story. It's sufficient to leave it as it is, mederech hapshat. Okay. Well, of course, the inevitable happens. You can love all you want. But meanwhile, she is the akara. She is the barren one. We don't hear much from her. You've heard what she had to say. The rest of the time, she's acted upon. Do you understand? She's acted upon. Nothing is, you don't hear her voice until the following. Bereshit Lamed, you've got your third citation. Vatere Rachel ki lo yalda li Yaakov. And she also saw that she's not getting pregnant and she's not birthing. Vatikane Rachel b'achota. And at that point, she was jealous of her sister. Vatomer el Yaakov, havali banim, v'im ayin meta anochi. Give me sons or else I'm... It's as if, okay, or else I'm dead. Rashi says, from here we learn that somebody who has no children may as well be dead. They see themselves as dead, certainly in that society, you understand? Ramban says, no, it's just exaggerated with a subtle message that I might kill myself, as young women are supposed to do when they get good and hysterical. If you don't give me what I want, you know, I'm going to die. That's all. He doesn't tolerate her message. And instead he responds, Vayichar af Yaakov b'Rachel. He became angry at her. Vayomer hatachat Elokim anochi? Am I in the stead of God? Asher mana mimech pri beten? That I'm withholding you from the fruit of the womb? My fault? What did I do? What are you coming to me for? Am I in the stead of God? What are you coming to me for? Ramban, as he's wont to do, criticizes Yaakov for his insensitivity. He says he should have torn his garments, cried with her, affirmed her feelings, pleaded with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. How dare he be so callous just because he's got kids, you know, Shalom Alei Nafshi? Good enough for me. But the Akedas Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Arama, Achon HaRishonim, Rishon HaCharonim, writes something way beyond his time. He says he was right to get angry at her. How dare you believe that if you have no children, you may as well be dead? Would you say the same thing about a man? If he has no children, he may as well be dead? And he continues and he says, until childbearing age, do we have our life no value? After childbearing age, does our life have no value? Are there not a whole bunch of other things that we're supposed to do that make us human and close to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam? How dare you? So when he says, Hatachat Elokim Anochi, it's like, what am I? Am I like God? Would the same apply to me if I had no children? You've got value. And what are you coming to me for? Now there's a very famous story about an old Shtetl, and I forget who it is, I believe it was the Koshnitzel Magid, a woman who had no children for many, many years. And, you know, there were people who were not Chassidish yet, but you finally, when you're desperate, you know, you'll knock on the door of every Baba and every Rebbe that you can get to. So you went to the Koshnitzel Magid, pleaded with him, daven for me, and he says, there's nothing I can do. The Shamus was so upset by how callous the Magid was to her As she stepped out, she turned to her and she says, "No, what is kimbrere? Me daf reden zum der Rebbeinu shel Olam. We've got no choice. I guess we've got to turn to God." And Magid turned to his shamus and he said, "You see, it's me. She needs to turn to God." And that's the message. Now, what she then does is she does what Sarah did, and we know what that led to: the birth of Yishmael. Oy vavoy. We start patchking. Instead of turning to God, we start patchking. We're going to fix things. And so she says, "Here, take my maid." And she gave him Bilha. And she'll give birth on my knees. It was a simple issue. Whoever was the midwife, you know, you caught the baby right here. Yeah. That's exactly what she did. She says, "V'banega manochi mimena," and I'll have, she'll be the surrogate, and, you know, or adopt a child. I will take that child and I will be built with this child. So he did that. And she gave birth. Vatomer Rachel. Now, these are the times when we have a chance to hear their voice. When we hear their voice, we know what their life of their mind and their heart is. Danani Elokim. Now, first of all, she always refers to God, and he did too, as Elokim. Elokim is Midas Hadin. It's this pretty harsh God. And she says, "He judged me. But v'gam shama bekoli. But he also heard my voice." Which tells you now, you see, from what she says, you know that she had been praying. Hence the solution that he said, "What are you coming to me for? Go to him." Vayiten li ben, and he gave me a son, and she called him Dan. That Bilha had another baby. Vatomer Rachel, when she renamed him, Naftule Elokim Niftalti. A ptil is a thread. You know how you make thread, 2-ply threads? You twist it. It's to wrangle, it's to wrestle. I wrestled with God and I wrestled with my sister. And I prevailed. And it's exactly the words that we will hear of Yaakov when his name becomes Yisrael. I wrestled with God. It's not fair. It's not just. What's the matter with you? I told you. Yes, we get angry at God. A God that you talk to, that you have a relationship with, you can cry to, you can be screaming at, you can yell at. You understand? That is not blasphemy. And I wrestled with my sister. This bind where you're tied to each other, right? You can't separate. You can't be reconciled. And she called him Naftali. But God at this point is judging her because she sees the flaw in her. So she accepts it as something that she has coming to her. In other words, she's not worthy. She's not worthy. Until, not long afterwards, Vayiskol Elokim et Rachel. God remembered Rachel. Vayishma Eleha Elokim. And God listened to her. Vayiftach et Rachma, and he opened her womb. Vatahar vateled ben, and she gave birth to a son. And for the first time, you're hearing this. Vatomer Asaf Elokim et Chelpati. God has taken my humiliation, gathered it in, taken it in, kind of cleaned it up. Because the assumption is that there must be something wrong with her, physically, morally, spiritually, if she has no children. But then she dares, and for the first time, she doesn't call him Elokim. She calls him Yudke Vavke. She calls him by the name of God. As a loving father, as a loving parent, as somebody who loves you unconditionally, and when somebody loves you unconditionally and they give you something, you dare to do what? Can I have one more? Vatikra et shmo, not Asaf, תקרא את שמו יוסף. לאמור, and those that know my pet peeve, the word does not mean saying, as if to say. Yosef Hashem li ben echad. I'd like one more son. Right? She dared. Careful what you ask for. It is after the birth of Yosef that Yaakov has had just about enough. He calls his wives out to the field and he speaks to them about, you know what your father has done to me. And they said, yesh lanu chelek v'nachala bevet avinu, hare et kaspeinu. Ganav, he stole our money. He stole everything from us. You think we have any loyalty to him? It was Rachel that spoke up. Leah, shut up. Rachel spoke up. Sometimes our sages say that she was punished for speaking up before her sister. Or maybe it was about time to somebody talk. And Abarbanel explains it as follows. And you remember that they snuck out quietly and they fled. But before they did, Rachel took the trafim. Now, why would she take it? Rashi says she wanted to prevent her father from avodah zarah. And Abarbanel says the trafim were nothing more than death masks. Once upon a time, people didn't have pictures. When somebody died, you put wax on their face, that became a mask. Now, yes, for some, they used it to pray. For others, it was nothing more than a memento. Of whom? Of our mother. No different, by the way, than when we were told, when we left Mitzrayim, to ask of our neighbors utensils of gold and utensils of silver, borrowing them, right? So that I'm not a slave. Pay me what you owe me. My declaration is to make a demand. Sometimes you got to have a guts not to just suck it up, but to say, I demand to be paid. Not to be such a good girl anymore. And she took it. And, of course, her father came running. And you remember that he went to look through everything and she sat on the saddle of a camel and said, oh, you forgive me, Dad. You know, it's before the age of tampons. I really can't get up, Dad. You understand? Yeah, she did what she needed to do. It was her comeuppance. Now, Yaakov didn't know about that. And Yaakov, being suspected of stealing from a guy who was the ultimate thief and cheat, literally a pot calling the kettle black, said, whoever has it will die. They no sooner come to Eretz Yisrael when they're hit by one trouble after the other. Dina is raped. All hell breaks loose. They got to move from where they're at. They move further. And we're told that they finally left and he goes back to Bet El. That was the place where he had his dream. Vayetzev Yaakov matseva b'makom asher diber eto matsevet even. Because remember when he had that dream of the ladder, he says, if you will be with me and give me beged lechol, lechem lechol, beged lelbosh, I will come back and build this. So he set up this matzevet, a memorial, Evan. And he poured, anointed it with oil, and he named that place Bethel. Vayisu mi Bethel, they left Bethel, and there was a way to go. By the way, not very far. Towards Ephrata, when she went into labor. You see, she never had her period. She was pregnant. Again. And she had a difficult delivery. And as she had difficulty delivering, she delivered that baby, but of course at the price of her life. As the baby came out, the Mialedet told her, Oh, al tir'i, don't worry, gam zelach, ben. You see, it was a breech delivery. How came that little tushy before the head came out? Vayhi bitzet nafsha, and as her soul left her, as she was bleeding to death, ki hadam wa nefesh. You understand? Hadam, blood, is the nefesh. So as the blood is leaving her, ki meta, because she was dying, vatikra shmo ben oni. She called him, now the word on, even, aven, with a vav when you pronounce it, or silent when you don't, has multiple meanings. It can mean the son of pain or agony. And the only son of the 12 tribes, that his father modified his name, and he called him Benjamin. But there's actually much more than that. Others treat the word Ben Oni, son of my sorrow. It's translated in various ways. There was a brilliant, brilliant article that I wanted to share with you, a rather obscure one. Now I gotta go find it. What happens when I start famishing things and don't put it in order and then I mess it up? A man by the name of David ben Rafael Chaim HaKohen. Doesn't mean much to you. For those of us that are old Yerushalmim, I know that he comes from an old Yerushalmi Sephardi family. From a very choshev family of Talmidei Chachamim. He didn't hold an academic position, but he did publish. And he says there's also the word aven, aleph vav nun, which means a no-no.
Means what?
A no-no. With an ayin, avon, it's an iniquity, an actual sin, something, you know, like there's misdemeanors, felonies, this one is our... But an aven comes from the shoresh, explains Rabbi Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, of an ein. It's a no-no. Look. It's a meeny, meeny little misdemeanor. A thing you shouldn't have done. It's not quite illegal, but it's a no-no. And he says as follows, she confessed, this is the son born of my no-no. It's my fault. Shouldn't have taken it. I shouldn't have lied. And he said to her, no, it's the son of my sin. Yamin is when you raise your hand to give an oath, because he swore, whoever has the trafim shall die. Such is the soul of lovers. He says, don't blame yourself, it's my fault. And he says, no, don't blame yourself, it's my fault. Vatamat Rachel vatikaver bederech Ephrata, he bet lechem. She died. And he buried her alone. The beloved wife is not buried next to her husband. That's where Leah is. She's all by herself. And it really wasn't that far away. Later on, Yaakov will apologize to Yosef. I had no choice. It was Mipi HaGvura that I buried her by herself. But what did he do? And I just wanted to juxtapose it. Vayatzev Yaakov Matseva. He put up a memorial, a big stone, on her place where she's buried. He matzevet kvurat Rachel ad hayom. You see the part here, the beginning? You see the end? There's Beit HaMikdash, which is Beit El, right? Where he put up a stone. And there is Kever Rachel. It was way before Yirmiyahu understood the connection. Thus, Yirmiyahu, who lived in Anatot and not in Yerushalayim, because he came from a family of Kohanim that were banished by Shlomo HaMelech. They did not serve in Beit HaMikdash, they were Kohanim. They could also not own land, so they were shepherds. And they used to lead the sheep near Midbar Yehuda. And on one side there was the desolation of the desert, and that's why all of his imagery is either the desolation of desert, or on the other side, the green and the verdant fields of Bethlehem. And notice the word Bethlehem means the house of bread. Okay. And as he came towards, he saw from a distance smoke rising, and he thought perhaps they had renewed the korbanot. But as he came closer, you will read in Eicha, he saw the glistening cobblestones of the streets of Yerushalayim, and didn't understand that they were glistening in the sunshine because they were wet with blood. And only when he came closer did he understand that the Beit HaMikdash was burning. So he himself was always torn, not home in the Beit HaMikdash, not quite Bet Lechem, in a triangular relationship, torn between the two of them. So when that was destroyed, there was one thing left. And that was Kever Rachel, to where people could go and pour their hearts out to Mama Rachel. And that's how she found her voice and became our advocate. V'shavu banim l'gvulam. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Yes.
But that's not where she is actually buried.
Oh, yes, it is.
Is it really?
Yes.
Why didn't
he
bury her as
Hebron? By the way, it's a hop, skip, and jump from there.
Yes, so if it's a hop, skip, and jump, why didn't he not bury her?
So others tried to excuse it that it was summer, it was hot, bodies rotted very quickly, proper respect would have been to bury her. But what they used to do if you couldn't bury them right away is that they used to bury them. When the bone, everything decomposed, you would take the bones and bring them back. They never did that.
That's what they did with Joseph.
Yeah. That's right. That's what they did with Yosef and brought him to Shechem. That's exactly right. And that's what was done with many. All of the sarcophagi that you'll see in the days of the Hashmonaim were tiny little boxes because they held nothing but bones. But it was because she would remain alone. She would remain alone. And nothing but an image of alone, am levadad yishkon, echa yashva badad, how she sits alone. And Bilam's words, how a people sit alone. Alone with?